Dave and Logan along with you. Thanks so much for joining us. We got the Dogs and Auburn coming up Saturday at 3:30. And if you're within a 75-mile geofence of Athens, you can listen to the game on the brand new 960 The Ref app. Of course, you can also use the open mic feature as well, Logan.
You certainly can. In fact, I got a new one just a second ago.
All right, let's pop this one in and hear what it sounds like.
It's kind of dangerous. I don't know what it is here. Hold on.
Yeah.
It's JR from Highland Park.
Wait, hold on a second. That's not the one. Here we go.
Hey, are you guys calling me or what? I ain't got all day, you know. I'm sitting here frying me some bacon waiting on y'all to call me. Come on, call me. I got to talk Braves baseball.
That's our man, Bill.
Mmm, bacon.
Frying some bacon.
Mmm, bacon.
I guess we got to call Bill Shanks.
Hey, Bill.
I was listening to you guys and went up and fried me some bacon. Listened on the app. Look here. I can hear it right now in the background because it's on the delay, thank God, because you got people like me who may cuss.
Yeah, I've got my
as we speak.
Every time we have you on the phone, I get my dump button ready just in case you go on a tangent.
That's right. You never know.
That's right.
The host of the Bill Shanks Show, thesuperstations.com, 93.1 FM in Macon, 98.3 FM in Warner Robins, and South Central Georgia, 105.9 FM in Warner Robins. Bill's also on the television, 41 NBC.
I didn't know I could tune in on the television. That changes everything.
I haven't bought a TV yet just because I'm not sure if it's going to stick around or not.
It's a fad.
That's why I'm still radio, but I'll give it another year or two. If it's still around, I'll go ahead and buy one.
Yeah, me and Uncle Milty are on every night.
Absolutely. Well, great, Bill. How are you, my man? Glad to see you back in Athens this past Saturday.
Oh, it was a fun night, fun game, and fun tailgate, and great day. Just I tell you, it's one of those things. I always say it, especially us. We're lucky, very lucky to cover sports and to be at great events. But that was one of those days. I was walking out of there, I'm like, it was a great day.
Yeah, November football is just football at its finest, and I had the same moment you did, looking at all the fall foliage over our beautiful campus, a night game. I know you probably watched a whole lot of Alabama-LSU prior to our game, and it's just everything you dream about when it's hot and miserable and boring during the summer, and we got to do that this weekend.
Oh, we did. It was just great. I actually had one of my guests.
Uh-oh. We got Bill?
Hello?
Mr. Shanks.
Man, he got cut off.
I had him on his home phone. I guess I'll try to call him back here in a second.
All right, we'll call Bill back in just a moment.
Wait. There he is.
Hey.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened.
I blame Lucy or Tommy John. It's okay.
No, you know what? The landline is on its last leg here because I'm keeping landline so I can do interviews with you guys and others that I have to do for my show, and it's not working out too well here recently. But anyway, back to answer your question. You know, one of my guests, Brett Beard, who's on my show every week, he tweeted out a picture of Alabama-LSU game, and he was like, here's the center of the football universe. And I was tailgating a little bit last week before I worked and actually propped my feet up on my cooler and took a picture of beautiful Athens right there in the Brooks lot and said, top this, big boy. I don't think he was able to, especially with his team loss. But it was a great day. Just a great day, great game, great win, great defensive performance. But, you know, you're right. Those are the days in November that I love. I don't mind a little cold weather, and it was sunny. It's just a shame that Auburn's too damn afraid to play us in November anymore after this game coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, hey, let's start there. Why not? Because you've been around this a long time, and you've got a lot of Georgia-Auburn memories. But it's not being welcomed with much fanfare from Georgia fans about that game moving. So this may be the final time we get them in that November setting. What are your just initial thoughts when this is now a reality, not just a rumor that could happen in the future?
Well, I think it's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. I think that there is something about history. You know, people may scoff about history, like for Georgia-Florida or for Georgia-Auburn to be played in November. There's nothing wrong with history, you know. And I love the fact that Georgia-Auburn is one of the premier games, and something's always on the line, as it is this Saturday. when the two teams play. I don't understand allowing them to do it or trying to not raise holy hell when the SEC asked if we could move the game, because there is such a thing as tradition, and you know, if they're afraid of Georgia, Alabama that close together, they ought to get their football team to be better. But I think it's awful, because a lot of times those weekends like we had last week are for Auburn games in November. And I mean, you think back to the great games we've had over the years for them, even over there. With, you know, I don't know if y'all know it or not, but they've lost 11 times in the last 14 years. Have y'all heard that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And I can confirm, yes.
They're just, I mean, I just think it's wrong and bad, and I hate that it's changing. And, you know, every year, Chip always says when he's on my show, he probably says on your show as well, you know, the Georgia season's usually defined, not always, but usually defined by the Florida, Auburn, and Georgia Tech games. I don't think we have to worry about Tech this year. But he's right. And to know that, you know, trio is going to be busted up by having Auburn in October before Georgia, Florida is just, I think, unfortunate.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a second, because I'm not inserting my opinion. I'm just asking a scenario here. In the next 10, 15 years, we don't know what college football will look like. We don't know what other teams look like. All those good times you just mentioned with Auburn, can we start to have those with Tennessee, with the East on the line? Could it eventually become something that is equally as good as what Georgia and Auburn has been? Uh-oh. He hated that question so much.
He hung up on you.
Hated that question so much. Okay. Let me call him back.
All right. The question was, could the same thing be happening when Tennessee rolls into town in November instead of Auburn? Well, sure it could. But does it have to be? Well, because it just feels like Auburn wanted the game moved and didn't want – well, it doesn't feel like it. Apparently that is the situation. But have to work out for all of that. So we'll get Bill back here in just a moment, and we'll continue the talk here of what's going on with his telephone. Logan, are you calling him back on a cell this time? We've come to a day and age where the cell's going to be more reliable than the landline. That's what's going on. Don't forget, we'll have Bulldogs Live with Kirby tonight, and that'll be it. 7:06. Do we have Bill back?
We got Bill back.
Hey, Bill.
Very sorry.
That's all right. One of our listeners wants to know if they're headed to the game Saturday. Is there any of your 25 or 2,500 stations that they can listen to the game on?
No, I'm not. We don't carry Georgia football. Not yet. We're going to work.
I hear
on
you.
That,
so I hear you. Just asking for a friend. So there you go, yeah. Tony. There you go. So Logan's question was, can Tennessee turn into Auburn in November?
I guess in time, if Tennessee does get better and has more of a relevance in the SEC, which, I mean, they're 5-5, so they're getting closer, right, compared to what they have been. But I guess I'm old-fashioned. I don't know, Dave. I mean, maybe when you get this age, you don't want things to change very, very much. But there's just a tradition for November games, whether it's over there or in Athens, to be relevant and significant. Not that it won't be in October, but again, I'm sounding old fashioned. Get off my lawn, you know. But anyway, I think in time, yeah, it could change if Tennessee becomes more of a significant player in the SEC again, which, you know, you expect at some point for them to be better, and they are better this year. I mean, they've done better since Georgia beat them, for sure, but I hope it will. If that's what we're going to be stuck with, David, I hope that Tennessee can be relevant enough to where those games are going to have that same feel that for years we've had with Auburn, because I think, look, you go and ask people about the best game they've ever been to in Athens. What we experienced a couple of months ago, obviously, is Notre Dame is going to be on the list, but that Auburn game a decade ago, the blackouts right there at the top.
Absolutely.
By the way, just out of curiosity, I'm looking this up while we're talking about it. So if Georgia ended up kind of swapping and getting Tennessee, who did Auburn end up? Who did they end up getting for next year?
I think they're going to get a Castor
LSU
game on this.
LSU got moved to the end of the schedule. It was actually like,
yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, it is kind of a ha-ha because now they get LSU and Alabama back-to-back to close out the
but
season.
But what are they road and away? Are they
– It's next year, it's LSU at Jordan-Hare and Alabama at Bryant-Denny.
So they at least got that aspect.
Right, at least they have a home and away instead of two and two. But still, there you go. So you got LSU and Alabama back-to-back to close out the season. All right, Bill, the Braves, wanted to ask you about this. Got some stuff going on. I guess the general manager's meetings are going on right now out in wherever the heck they are. Arizona, out in the desert. Do you expect to see anything going on with this? Is there an anticipation of more – I don't necessarily know about free agency, that kind of thing, but player movement than we've kind of seen in the past, or what's going on out there right now?
Well, David, there are some rumors starting to pop this week, which is good, but it's so dangerous, I think, to predict how much activity or when the activity will start because of what's happened the last two off seasons, where it's obviously lingered into not only January, February, March, but into June last year with the Kimbrel and tackle situations. There is speculation this year that it might be a little bit more quicker and that we won't have to wait as long. But you know, last night there was a report that Garrett Cole's agent says that they're going to wait until January probably to make a decision. So, you know, you could think if Cole's the main guy, you have to have others wait on him for the market to kind of fall in place. And if he's going to wait until January, the market may wait until January. But I don't know what to expect. Kind of difficult, I think, and to just gauge how quickly these things are going to move. We know how 30-year-old free agents have not moved very quickly in the last 2 years. So will a player like a Madison Bumgarner take longer, or will a team like the Braves strike quick to be able to get him? We saw the Braves act quickly last year in November with both Lyle McCann and Josh Donaldson. Really got their off-season chopping done right there before December the 1st and before the winter meeting. Will that happen again either with the Braves or some other team? It's really hard to predict. I think there's got to be an aggressive approach here. However, now the other angle of this, David, that's kind of sketchy is there are three players who may possibly be on the trade block, and these are three significant players: Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, and Chris Bryant. Three players that, for all I know, the Braves may have interest in. I know they have checked in on Mookie Betts and have at least asked the Red Sox about him, considering all the rumors. But, you know, will we have to see one of those players or more than one of those players be moved for the dominoes to fall?
And you did a poll on your Twitter feed about which player would you prefer the Braves to target, and pretty overwhelming, more than half, said Francisco Lindor. Does that surprise you?
Yes, I'm really surprised by that. I only put it up about an hour ago, Dave, and I thought it'd be more Mookie Betts or more split. But yeah, it was right before you guys called me. It was like 50% Lindor and 33% Betts, and about 15 for Bryant, and about 10 or so for, you know, too risky, because obviously there is risk. I mean, these guys are pending free agents coming up. Betts after next year, and Lindor, I think Bryant too, after 2021. So do you give away a large package for a player who you hope to re-sign but you're not sure of? I mean, I think, David, if Alex Anthopoulos was interested in doing something with one of those three players, he would have to go to Terry McGurk and say, okay, look, I'm going to trade for Mookie Betts. Are you going to allow me to offer him a 7-year, $240 million, whatever it's going to be, contract? Are you going to allow me to offer him one of the biggest deals in baseball? If he says no, then you can't trade Drew Waters and you know, Kyle Wright and another player for 1 year of Mookie Betts. But if you get that guarantee that the money will be there no matter what, then you have to pursue it, I believe.
The AJC.com has a little Q&A here with Anthopoulos, and one of the questions was about the trio of Tukey and Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright all struggling this past season. Those three guys, you can only keep one. You know, you basically, you're buying stock. Who would you buy stock in of those three?
probably Kyle Wright. I still hold out hope that the Vanderbilt pedigree will result in him kind of figuring everything out and it clicking with him. I'm just not as big of a Bryce Wilson fan. I think, and I've had people who I've told that to say, well, you know, he's still young. Be patient, which he is young compared to Wright. I don't know. I mean, all three of these guys have had opportunities, and you want them to jump on it, right? You want them to stick and stay, and they haven't done it. And I think, you know, we could see them involved in trades. That would be a natural situation where you would put them on the block if you were to make a big deal, because they're not untouchable, and they would have big league experience, and they would have value. But I would probably keep Wright of the three. I don't know what Tukey is. The same old question, is he a reliever or a starter? And I just don't know about Wilson. Wilson may be better in 5 years than he is right now. It's just going to take a while for him to get there.
Hey, look, I mean, not everyone pans out. I get it. And who would have thought, what, like 10 years ago, Charlie Morton would be what he is now? I mean, you just don't know. So, I mean, it is hard to say with a lot of these guys.
Charlie had the stuff, David, but there were – Charlie's a great young man.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so great. But he was very passive in the minor leagues. I don't think they – believed that he had that bulldog mentality to be a lone sustaining starting pitcher. I didn't. And I mean, I'm telling you, I know I'll say this about a lot of those kids. Charlie Morton is unbelievable. He's just a nice, nice kid and young man. But the stuff wise was there. I mean, I remember he pitched early in his career against Adam Wainwright one time. And I told Adam Wainwright's brother, who I know from being from South Georgia, I said, here's our next shot at having Adam Wainwright because of Charlie's curveball. But there was a question because you just didn't know, and that's why Frank and included him in the Nate McLeod deal. But, David, it took him several years to click. You know,
he's
obviously a whole different pitcher now, and he had injuries, and he's – I mean, my God, there was a time, I think, David, where he was like 25 games under .500 in his career, and now he's going to win 100 games in his career if he keeps this up, and that's a great thing. But, yeah, I think – you know, a lot of people would have not taken him as a bet. And that's the thing. Sometimes it takes pitchers longer. And I'm not saying that Bryce Wilson, or Tukey for that matter, can't be good down the road. But I just think, you know, if you're going to take one of them, I would probably take Kyle White.
I'm with you on that. I am. By the way, in talking about Charlie Morton or some of these guys, mm-hmm. when they go to another organization or go to another organization even after that one, and you'll hear the old, well, that guy, all he needed was a change of scenery. That's an old, that's a good cliche there, old change of scenery. But you know what that means? It means sometimes you just get a coach that you click with, and somebody
Absolutely.
Spots something, and they see something, and all of a sudden, you're in a better place. Maybe it's mentally, maybe they just spot something that you're doing physically, and that's what the old change of scenery can be. So, I mean, there is something to that, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's just, oh, he's got to get in a different clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Generally, it's just, hey, you got a different coach, and it works out
better
for you.
Absolutely, David. That's a great point. And, you know, you may remember, I really like JoJo Reyes' potential.
Yeah.
And I a decade ago, I would have taken JoJo Reyes over Charlie Morton.
He looked the part.
He had better stuff than Charlie. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, they were pretty close. One was a righty, one was a lefty. But, I mean, Charlie always had that hammer curveball. But so did JoJo. JoJo had a very good curveball for a left-handed pitcher. He had a very good changeup. His fastball early on was pretty good. And I saw him in the Gulf Coast League. And I saw Charlie in Rome. So I saw them very early, both pitchers very early, but I really thought JoJo, I didn't think he was going to be a Tom Glavine, but which every lefty pitcher a decade ago when the Braves system was compared to Tom Glavine, you know, but I thought he'd be better than Chucky James, I'll say that, and I love Chucky James, but Chucky was limited stuff-wise, obviously. But I thought JoJo had the stuff, and I thought he was pretty tough-minded, and, you know, and he's a great guy, too, but I don't think he ever clicked with the big league coaches. And, you know, this sounds like people are blaming people for not being successful, but a lot of times you're right. A lot of times pitchers will have a mindset of what they've got to do, and they'll hear things from coaches, and it gets all bangled up in there, Dave, and I think it gets so confusing that they get out there on that round thing on the mound and don't know what to do. And I think that might have been something for JoJo, because I don't think he clicked with Roger McDowell, and Roger was a great pitching coach. I just don't think they clicked, really. And I'm not blaming Roger for JoJo having an ERA over 6, but I just think, you know, a lot of those young pitchers have the stuff. Bryce Wilson has the stuff. Tiki Toussaint has the stuff. But everything's got to kind of be in order for them to click and to hit pay dirt with their talent and their potential. And a lot of times it doesn't happen. Most times it doesn't happen. That's why you always hear, Dave, about how you have to have 10 prospects to have one pitcher. You know, you've got to have that many to try to have one Mike Soroka or one Max Fried or one Ian Anderson, hopefully. But it's tough, and that's where the self-scouting and the real evaluation of your internal talent is so critical. I mean, now it's Anthopoulos has had 2 years of it. I mean, they just fired their farm director, but I mean, they've had 2 years to really evaluate these players and I think know which ones to put in the trade.
Bill, switching gears just a little bit before we let you run. If you had told me back in, let's say, early mid-October that the Falcons would only have one more win on the schedule and it was going to be a blowout win in New Orleans, I'm signing up for that. What happened, Bill? How did that become a thing?
Well, I mean, I think, and I hate the Saints, and
you know, me too.
I think the Saints took Atlanta for granted.
Yep.
I think Atlanta had the week off, and they came in and they were like, "By God, we're not going to lose this game. We may lose next week. Yep. We may lose the week after that, but we're not going to lose this game because the hatred's real." I don't think Dan Quinn got it until about his third year of how bad this rivalry is or good this rivalry is. But the hatred's real, and I think those players feel it, and they didn't want to be embarrassed. I mean, I'm embarrassed because I said all last week they're going to get killed.
Yep.
I really thought they were going to get killed. But, I mean, there was reason to believe that, right? 1-7 versus 7-1 against your arch rival who hates you and whose head coach hates you more than anything in his life. And Sean Payton hates the Falcons more than anything in his life. Maybe except for Roger Goodell, but I mean, my God, it was a shocking thing. It was a great thing. I'm glad for them because you hate players having to go through the type of season they're having. But you know, look, I don't think we should expect some big run here.
Yeah,
they're still kind of who they are, and they got to play a Carolina team that I think is pretty good, and they got to stop Christian McCaffrey, which is going to be really tough this year. But hey, and you know, they're going to get New Orleans is going to want to get payback on Thanksgiving night. So
oh yeah,
you got to be careful.
I had that same thought.
It was a great win for them. Good for them.
It was a good win, but just make no mistake, this doesn't change the way we feel about what needs to happen with the front office of the Falcons. Is that right?
Well, you know what, Logan? I think that this game was even more than a nightmare on Dan Quinn than any game this year.
That's fair enough.
Thank you.
I mean, fair enough.
You know, I
thank
mean,
you. That just makes it more maddening.
Right. I mean, Dave, they had Raheem Morris on the offensive coaching staff. What the hell was that all about? That made no sense. He was a defensive coach his entire life. You had him on his wide receivers coach. Then you put him on defense, and boom, what happens? They win a game. I mean, ding, ding. You know, I mean,
Logan said Tuesday, he goes, Dave, thanks for not bringing that part of it up until Tuesday so that I could enjoy just talking about a Falcons win on Monday. Because yeah, that it's just maddening. I totally agree. That would have been one where after they won the game, Arthur Blank should have gone out on the field and fired Dan Quinn on the spot.
I know. I agree. And you know, look, you worry about Arthur Blank, and some people call this week and say, well, aren't you worried about if they win a couple more, Arthur Blank get all sentimental and keep him? I'm like, yeah, I'm worried about that because the dingbat goes and gives these lifetime contracts, these Falcons for life contracts to Freeman and Jones and ties the team up in bad situations. But, I mean, no, that to me, that's an indictment on Dan Quinn of the fact that you said you were going to be the defense coordinator, you were going to fix defense, you were going to fix Vic Beasley. And they didn't even know what they were doing. They were looking around like Georgia's players did under Todd Grantham, looking at the sidelines, shrugging their shoulders like, what do we do? And all of a sudden, you put the offensive wide receiver coach on defense where he should have been in the first place, and they go beat your arch rival who was 7-1. Are you kidding me?
Love it.
Holding them without a touchdown.
Right.
I mean, incredible.
First time in Drew Brees' history as Saints quarterback.
Yeah.
In New Orleans.
That probably drives Sean Payton up the wall. Ugh. That happened is Dan Quinn.
Couldn't happen to a better dude.
Good grief. Yeah.
Good stuff, Bill. Appreciate it.
Bill, you're the man.
Hey, next week let's talk Hawks. I'm excited about Trae Young. Holy cow.
Hey, you joke. Or maybe you're not. I don't know. I am excited about Trae Young.
Oh, my God. It's I'm not kidding. I can't wait till tonight when Atlanta Hawks play the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
I'm serious. And Steve Holman's tremendous on the radio.
Yeah, one of the greats.
I love Bob and Nick, but they're that's fun. That's weak. I'm encouraging people to get on the bandwagon.
But the Hawks are going to hawk with John Collins getting the suspension.
Come on, Dave.
But you know what? I don't hate that because it's like, all right, this isn't. They could push for maybe trying to get a playoff spot, but if John Collins has got to miss a third of the season, better this year than next year, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I don't really care about wins and losses. I mean, I want him to win compared to last year when I want him to lose.
Yeah.
I just want to enjoy the process of watching Hunter and Reddish and the rest of and Bruno Fernando and Kevin Herter, who I hope gets back quickly next week, and Young play. I mean, it's kind of like how the Braves were a couple of years ago, where it's like, you better not worry about the record right now, but just watch them develop. And man, these kids are 21 and 20 years old. I mean, holy cow. Real quick, David, you think back to it when, in the mid-'80s, when we were watching the Hawks develop that great team, Dominique and Kevin Willis and Randy Whitman and Doc Rivers. Those kids had played 3 or 4 years in college. They were 22, 23, 4 years old. And these kids are 20 and 21, so that's what's fun about it.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Hey, I'll go get on the app and do the open mic and keep on talking about Hawks for 30 seconds.
Please do. Hey, nothing like a 7-day tease. We'll talk Hawks with Bill Shanks next Thursday. Looking forward to that.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
The man, Bill Shanks.